It's time for The Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's The Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the spirit of Boston. Well, it's 1 week before Newport Car Week. It's a big stuff going on in Newport. And we have our friend Gunther Berman on the phone with us from the Newport Car Museum. Gunther, good morning and welcome back to the Car Doctor program.
John Paul, great to hear from you again, and nice to be on your show. I really appreciate the opportunity of spending a little time this morning with you.
Well, it was kind of funny. Yesterday I was out talking to a group of guys from the Dedham, Massachusetts Retired Professional Men's Club, and one of them said to me, "Have you ever been to the Newport Car Museum?" And they couldn't get over how beautiful it is down there, and what you and honestly your wife have done with it. It is such a phenomenal place. And coming up next weekend is Motor Week, and you guys are kind of expanding your hours a little bit for the Newport Motor Week, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've always had the feeling that just like two restaurants on a street, both of them do better having two museums, and especially now Auto Week that Drain's putting together gives us an opportunity, I think, to sort of show our wares and attract people from all over the country to what's become not only maybe the sailing center of the world, but at least an area where car enthusiasts can see some wonderful automobiles and an environment that's just fabulous. Newport, Rhode Island, and where we are, and just outside.
Yeah, no, you have, you know, I was at a meeting the other day, and Wayne Carini, the host of Chasing Classic Cars, was there, and we were talking about how between Audrain, you, and there's actually a third kind of private museum that opens up periodically down in Newport, and how Newport is really turning into this automotive mecca of beautiful cars. And this weekend up in Boston is the Boston Cup, and I was at something last night and ran into Rich Doucette, and I said, what's the deal with all of a sudden New England turning into this automotive capital, where before it was sort of, yeah, we had Lars Anderson and we had Owl's Head and we had a couple other museums, but it didn't seem to have the buzz. And he just said it's the pent up demand of the automotive enthusiast community that is really making all of this take off. And certainly, I was talking about the Newport Car Museum at the New England Motor Press Association meeting, and one of the guys came over to me, and he referred to you as my buddy, because I keep talking about the Newport Car Museum so much.
Well, it's very, very, very nice of you. Well, I think one of the things that happened when we actually were in the planning stages of doing the museum is that I think we did some research and found that probably the most car clubs in America are in the New England area. That doesn't mean that you know all about them, but we have car clubs regularly come to the museum, and when they do their outing, we have an event later on in October, a Eurocar event, where, you know, we're expecting 150 to 200 cars to, you know, we have this huge parking lot with more than 300 spaces, so we can accommodate these huge clubs, and they come for a Sunday morning for to look at the museum, and we have coffee and donuts mm-hmm. and things for them. So it's a kind of fun outing for them without having to face the parking costs associated with going directly into Newport. As you know, that's always a challenge to find spaces. But we're lucky enough to have free parking and a lot of it, so that we can accommodate this huge number of car clubs in the New England area. And it's nice to see that that there's some enthusiasm. We've had actually over 80,000 people come visit us. When we put the museum together, I thought maybe we would have 8 or 10.
Oh, well, yeah.
But we've had 80,000 people, and you know, people Google us from all over the world. This time of year, we're finding that maybe because it's off season and things are more affordable, but we're finding tourists from Europe and Asia, the kind of being the bread and butter of our fall visitors and things. They half the people that come can't speak English, but they love cars.
And I've always said cars are the sort of common denominator sometimes between groups of people, and for people to have an appreciation. And you know, your wife Maggie said something once about the museum, and I don't know if I got this quote right, but I think it was, "If it looks like oil and it smells like gas, I don't want it in my museum."
Right, right.
So,
and we have to have classy bathrooms.
Yeah.
Her big hope when we opened the museum, she said, "I want people to walk into the front of the museum and go wow." And we get a lot of that. People knocked out by. I think it probably is the way it's laid out, more like an art gallery than a typical car museum, where you know the cars are in a line with velvet ropes in front of them and big signs, so you can't really see them. We've kind of laid it out without ropes and up on little platforms, so people can get close and look at the interiors and get close and personal to these wonderful works of art that you know, modern technology and stylists have produced that are fascinating. People talk about the muscle car era and the GTOs and the Camaros of the 60s, but boy, these days with what the car companies are doing all over the world, it's another muscle car era. There isn't a manufacturer that can't see that doesn't have a super performance car these days, and the Corvettes come out with, well, at least the 2019 before their new model, mid-engine model with 755 horsepower, and the Dodge Demon has 840 horsepower, and 500 is probably the medium of what's out there these days.
Yeah.
So it's a fabulous time if you like performance automobiles and safe performance automobiles.
Yeah. No, I'm driving an Acura RDX, a little SUV, this week, and it has a 4-cylinder turbocharged engine, and it makes almost 300 horsepower. And you think about that, you know, 300 horsepower in a small SUV with a little small 4-cylinder engine, how is that even possible? But yeah, the manufacturers are truly giving away horsepower. And you know, for people to think that, you know, although cars may look similar today because they're sort of designed in wind tunnels, for people to think this is not the golden era of cars, I really think it is, because of there's so many choices. I think one of my favorite exhibits you have, when people tell me about boring hybrids, I tell them they need to go see your hybrid exhibit.
Well, we're going to add to it. We haven't rolled it out yet, but you know, in addition to the 918 Porsche and the new Acura NSX and the i8 BMW, we just acquired a P1 McLaren, which is, you know, another one of these sort of hyper cars that is both electric and 904 horsepower of craziness.
Well, and I think since the last time I talked to you, you also added, did you add another room? Kind of a...
Yes. Yes. We sort of, again, had a lot of demand for, or interest in the muscle car era as opposed to the thin cars and the Euro cars and even the even the Mopar stuff, and so we opened up a sort of a muscle car a section of the museum, a separate room that has a 64 GTO, the first year of the mm-hmm. of the GTO, and a Camaro, and a Chevelle SS, and a Hemi Challenger, and the first year high pro Mustang, a convertible. So you know, we've oh, and a Hemi Challenger RT. So those were the kind of the iconic street racers of the era.
Yeah, no, it's you know, fabulous stuff, and you've truly kind of made the museum a destination. You know, Dennis, my producer, can go there and practice his golf swing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We have a little space in the back. It's about 5,000 square feet of golf simulators. It's TrackMan, the thing that follows the pros around when we watch golf tournaments and shows the arc and the speed of the swing and what how fast your club head is going, how much spin that you have, and it's fabulous because you can play almost any golf course in the world, almost like the simulators that we have that you can do almost any race course in the world. Go over and play almost any golf course in the world, and they can set you up with the latest clubs, with the latest shafts and things like that. It's been, I'm especially starting at this time of the year, I get depressed pulling into our facility because there's more cars in front of my son's golf facility than going to the museum sometimes.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that later. You know, sometimes, and you do some fun stuff down there too. Sometimes you have a hoods up night where you have the hoods up on the cool cars, and you can, you know, see what, you know, get a little you, like you said, you have ropes down where, you know, there's no ropes. You can get a little up close and personal, but there's times where you have the hoods up where you can kind of get under the hood of the car and see what makes some of these fabulous cars tick.
Yeah, we have it usually the first weekend of the month. We're having it actually this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Hoods up so people can take a look at the engines. And unfortunately, many of the modern cars, the whole engine is covered with plastic, so there isn't much to see. In fact, the 918, there's just this little flap that goes up, and you can barely look in. But certainly all the muscle cars and the 60s fin cars that we have, and it's really interesting to see the size of the engines that they put in those cars. We have, you know, a Boss 9 Mustang and that, you know, the NASCAR engine that went in that car, and the 426 Hemis that went in the Mopar cars. We've got plenty of those things to take a look at, and it's fun. It's fun to see what was going on engineering wise in those days.
Yeah, absolutely. And see how it's all changed, and how it was, you know, it was all about cubic inches, and now it's more about electronics and technology, but still pretty amazing stuff. And like I said, you guys are kind of expanding your hours coming up for Newport's first ever Motor Week, and I guess you guys are going to open from 10 to 8 next weekend?
Yeah, we hope that people will have a full day of enjoying the automobiles, both on display at the Concours and at our place. We also, we're really excited about the movie that's coming out, the Ford versus Ferrari movie that's coming out this fall, kind of tracing the history of Ford getting upset because they couldn't buy Ferrari and going to Le Mans for their cars. We're doing a documentary of that era, and a little trailer of the movie during this Motor Week, and hopefully we'll be in a position of showing that movie sometime, because it was not only an interesting era in terms of cars and automobile manufacturers and the personalities that Henry Ford II and Enzo Ferrari getting into it at a time. I think it's a fascinating time in race history at Le Mans and the history of some of the iconic car manufacturers in the world. It'll be fun, and the fact that they made this movie is going to be, I think, helpful to spur some additional interest in cars. I mean, we're happy. We're sort of the largest car museum, I think, in New England, and maybe up and down the East Coast. We like to compare ourselves to some of the better museums in the world, and the people at Peterson and Revs helped us as we designed the museum, and we're very proud of how it came out, and we try to stay very current in terms of automobiles. It isn't, and I get worried because we started in 1954 and now it's what 65 year old cars, and I hate to see people age out. People sometimes ask, why don't you have any of those wonderful pre-war cars, which I think are wonderful too, but the people that like those cars are sort of aging out, and so we try to stay current. We have, you know, a 2019 Corvette, and so we get new things all the time, and trying to stay current while you know, going back and making sure that we pick up some of the great artwork that existed, you know, over the last 60 years.
Yeah, no, it's fabulous stuff, and if people want more information, it's newportcarmuseum.org, right?
Right.
Yeah, and so they can go to Newport Car Museum. And on Black Friday, if you don't want to go shopping and you're a AAA member, you can save a couple bucks on admission, right?
Right, right. Yeah. We had a very successful AAA day last year, and we think we have a wonderful museum, and we don't discount things on a regular basis, but we know that AAA people are car people, and
some of us are cheap too. You know, I'll admit it.
the coffee and donuts are free. So, yeah, come on by on the weekends. I do get a kick out of watching. You know, we produced movies for each of the galleries, and I get such a kick out of watching grandfathers, fathers, and kids sitting and watching movies about Carroll Shelby, talking about some of the history of things and some of the wonderful ads in the FinCar things, that, you know, the silly ads of the initial television ads on various cars. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And most people spend an hour, half to 2 hours hanging out. So, driving the simulators and maybe hitting golf balls, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff to do.
No, it's a true destination, and it's 1947 West Main Street. It's in Portsmouth, but it is called the Newport Car Museum. And Gunther, I want to thank you for taking a little time out of your Saturday and joining us up here in Boston, and hope to see you next weekend.
Please stop, and we'll show you some of our new stuff, and I really appreciate the opportunity of having a chance to speak with you and your listeners again.
Anytime, Gunther. Thank you. All right.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Why don't we take a quick break and pay some bills? The Newport Car Museum, go there. It's a fantastic place. NewportCarMuseum.org is the web address. It's actually in Portsmouth, right over the line. But go take a look. And if you get there for Car Week, Auto Week, whatever they're calling it next week, it's going to be a pretty busy place. But go check it out. We'll be right back.
Slow down, little Jaguar. He could live Thunderbird Ford. Newtonville was a real small town. Had 102 and 9 acres of ground. Some stool pigeon put the sheriff wise. Told him park down in Newtonville.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, 100.3 FM, WROLradio.com, the WROL app, all kinds of ways to get through and talk to us. Why don't we go to, I think we have a call. Why don't we talk to Mike? Michael!
Good morning, car doctor. How are you?
Okay, I think I walked by your car last night. Do you have a three-number plate?
Yep.
And the shiniest Lexus I've seen?
Yep.
Yep.
That's it.
That was it?
I missed you. What time did you get there?
I got there early. I got there right when it started, like 6 o'clock.
I'm sorry I missed you. Did you get some of the large hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that?
I got to tell you, I wasn't all that impressed with the hors d'oeuvres, but...
Later on, they got better. But I just want to say, what a nice job they did. They really did a nice job with the setup and I thought it was first class the whole way.
It really was, and I didn't realize until I got there it also had to do with the Boston Cup, which is going on.
Okay, well, I didn't know that either.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah, so Rich Doucette, who's the founding chairman of the Boston Cup, which is tomorrow in at the Boston Common. This was part of some invited guests to the Acura event. But yeah, for people who don't know what we're talking about, Acura had a special invitation for people that they thought would be interested in maybe being a potential buyer of an NSX or a Honda Jet.
Extra $5.5 million sitting in your pocket.
Yep. Yeah, it was. I have to admit, I really kind of liked the Honda Jet.
Tight,
It was a little tight, and I. One of the questions I asked the guy from, and apparently it's made in Georgia or something, but I asked about was how many people buy it to fly it, and how many people is it just a corporate plane? And he says it's about 50-50. About half the people who buy them actually buy them to fly them and fly their families around, and actually get up in the pilot seat.
Yeah, people should take a look at it because the engines stick out of the wing on top, which I thought was very interesting.
Yeah,
the way they mounted the engines on that thing. And I did get to drive the NSX. Wow, what a powerful car that was!
It was kind of funny, and I'm going to use you as an example here. They said to me, "Oh, we can slot you in at like 8:40 or something to drive the car," and I'm like, "I'll be home by then." And I said, "Well, maybe while I'm there, I'll interview somebody who just took it for a ride and just ask them what they thought about the car." And they said to me, "Oh, I'm sorry, you can't do that because some of these people are here and they'd like a little bit of privacy." And I'm like, "Okay, fine, I guess." So, what was the car like?
It was great. I mean, it's it was tight getting into it.
Yep.
You took it around the back roads of Bedford, so you really couldn't, get it. But instantaneous power because of both the two electric motors and the 500 horsepower supercharged engine it had. It handled like it was on rails, going around corners and such like that. But it was nicely laid out, made in America, by the way, made in the USA, and just everything you would think of a sports car. Stopped well, but the power because of the electric motors was instantaneous and just drove you right back into the seat. When you stepped out. It's the fastest car I've ever been in my life.
Yeah, it is. It's a really incredible car. And what the new vice president of Acura says is he wants a little bit of NSX in every one of his cars now. He wants a little bit of that DNA. Even in the big SUV, the MDX, he's like, I want people to feel that this is truly the sporty side of Acura, and I want all of our cars to have some level of sportiness in them. And I think the idea of and the guy who Gunther, who was just on, the idea that a hybrid was a Prius that went from 0 to 60 in 10 seconds, like he said, he has a 2014 P1 McLaren, which is technically a hybrid, a Porsche 918, which is a hybrid, and the Acura NSX, which is hybrid, which makes his hybrid section look pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was amazing. Just a great time. Sorry, I didn't get to see you. But and by the way, the shiny car was that has the clear coat on it, the ceramic.
I got home last night, I said to my wife, I'm pretty sure that was your car, because I remember you told me about it. I said, and it was hands down the cleanest looking. I looked at your car, and kind of diagonally opposite you was a red Ferrari, and I'm like, you know, that looks better than the Ferrari paint.
Well, thank you very much. I try to keep it clean. Sorry I missed you. I'm going to read your article in the Globe right now.
All right. Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, Mike. Bye-bye. Yeah, interesting. The fellow who keeps the building running here always keeps the Globe tucked away for me so I can at least see if I was in it. And I noticed the article in the Globe today. I think I submitted it to the Globe a month ago. But it's an article about what do you do if you have a Tesla and you're putting it away for the winter. How do you store it? And Tesla has, some people say just leave it plugged in and charge. Some people say put a trickle charger on the main battery to keep that from working. Other people say the big batteries will charge up the little battery. And the biggest frustration with Tesla is they don't tell you anything. They don't tell you. So they do refer to it as vampire drain. So you don't have your vampire sweatshirt on. But
no, I don't.
Yeah, but they refer to it as vampire drain. And even right in their owner's manual, it has some conflicting information. I found the owner's manual online, and it has some conflicting information about how you store it. So... some Tesla owners just leave it plugged in and hope for the best. Others don't do anything.
So can you not drive Teslas in the wintertime?
No, you can, but people that go to Florida or in the winter or Arizona or...
How are they in the winter? Like, how's their traction and stuff?
Well, you can get a dual motor, so you get all-wheel drive.
Oh.
Yeah, so the first ones were rear-wheel drive, and then they come out with the dual motor ones. Even in the small one, in the Tesla 3, they have a dual motor design, so it's all-wheel drive. So they're actually pretty good. And my old boss bought a Tesla 4 or 5 years ago. And then he bought a dual motor Tesla, traded in that one. And since then, he's got rid of that one, and he's got two of the small ones, the 3s. And... So he got rid of the big one, got a little one, got the cheaper one. But he got two. But I asked him once, why did you buy a Tesla? And he said, I wanted an American luxury car. And he said, I've owned a Cadillac. I didn't really like it. He said, it broke down a lot, leaked oil. And he said, I owned a Lincoln. It was a little bit better than the Cadillac, but it didn't do that much for me either. And he said, when I went looking, he said, I still wanted an American luxury car. And he said, this is an American luxury car with all kinds of cool features in it. And he bought the first one. Then he wanted all-wheel drive for the winter. Then he bought his grandson a Tesla, like, pedal car thing, which probably was $700. Which is still pretty cool. I mean, if I could do it, I would do it for a kid too, because it's, and then he decided to get the smaller one, and he's very happy with the small one, and I think he and he has a charger at his house, so he can charge it up at his house, and it all works out. So kind of good stuff. Well, we were supposed to have a guest from Ford Motor Company, Ted Ryan. He's the Ford Archives and Brand Manager, but I don't know where he went. So our phone lines are open at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. You can get through and call us and talk about whatever's on your mind about cars, and we can find out what you have on your mind. Maybe you have some questions about something that's been bothering you about your car, what you need to do about it, stuff like that. Hyundai Motor Company and a local company here, Aptiv, which was Newtonomy, a self-driving car company, have actually formed an autonomous driving joint venture. So they want to work on level 4 and level 5 self-driving technology. And it's kind of interesting. The news release comes from Seoul, Dublin, and Boston. I guess that's pretty worldwide.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it says here, Hyundai Motor Company Group and Aptiv announced today they will be forming an autonomous driving venture. This partnership brings together one of the industry's most innovative vehicle technology providers and one of the world's largest vehicle manufacturers. And it's hard to think that Hyundai and Kia are the world's one of the world's largest vehicle manufacturers because we just kind of got to know them here. But they really are. As part of the agreement, Hyundai and Aptiv will each have a 50% stake in a joint venture valued at about $4 billion. Aptiv will contribute its autonomous driving technology, intellectual property, and approximately 700 employees focused on development of scalable autonomous driving solutions. Hyundai Motor Group affiliates, Hyundai Motor, Kia Motors, and Hyundai Mobis will collectively contribute a whole bunch of cash as well. And autonomous driving.
What is level 4 and level 5?
I was just going to get into that.
Okay.
Funny you ask.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Level 0 is a car that does nothing for you. You get in it, you drive it. That's about all it does. Level 1 is kind of what your car is. Smart cruise control. It warns you when you get out of the lane. It corrects a little bit when you get when you start to drift out of the lane. So it has some self-driving automatic driver assistance features. Level 2 is an improvement beyond that. So it might be something like Cadillac Smart Cruise, where it doesn't just look at the car in front of you for speed recognition. It looks at the car in front of that one and the car in front of that one. So it can see further down. It sees further down the road than, say, yours does. Cadillac has that. Audi has that. Mercedes has that. Level 3 is, in my opinion, the stupid level. Because it is a level, and it is a level that drives itself till it can't. So, in other words, it requires you to jump in case things go badly. So it can drive itself, and then all of a sudden, when it can't drive itself, like something happened, it runs it It says you need to take over. Well, if I have a car that's going to drive itself, I want it to drive itself. And that's what level 4 is. Level 4 is a fully self-driving car, but it's a fully self-driving car within a certain geographical area. So maybe it's a car that drives itself in the entire downtown Boston area. But if you wanted to drive to Washington, D.C., Level 5 is a car that can drive to Washington, D.C. and any place in between. So level 5 is a truly almost self-aware, continually learning car, where level 4 requires a lot of pre-plotting and stuff to happen at the same time. So yesterday there was probably 40 or so people in this Dedham Retired Men's Club thing that I went to at the Endicott Estate, where they have the big car show in July. And I said, how many people here would feel comfortable in a self-driving car? Not a single hand went up. Usually there's a few. There was not a single hand that went up. And because there were a bunch of older guys, I said to them, how many people remember getting in an elevator with an elevator operator? Somebody whose job it was when you got in the elevator to, you said floor 3 and the guy went okay and the elevator started to move and he had to flip some switches and open a door and click some things for the elevator to stop on the third floor. About half the people said, yeah. And half the people said, well, you probably went to Macy's and you're probably buying blueberry muffins, if you remember that, because that was the elevator operator. Yeah. So I said, what was it like the first time you got in the elevator and there was no guy? It was just buttons. They're like, yeah, it was kind of, now that you mention it, that was kind of shocking that, you know, I had control. I pushed a button and the elevator stopped at 3. Kind of the same. So the stuff that you have in your car, and this is Dennis I'm talking to, not your car, not you, the radio world. But the stuff that Dennis has in his car, for instance, is a way to sort of get used to what the future will be. The problem is maybe your son will have a self-driving car. Maybe.
Well, Have you heard about the low orbiting satellite that that's coming out for the internet?
No.
And all that?
No.
Research that. You might think that the self-driving car is coming a lot faster than...
Because of low orbiting. Well, and they're saying 5G is part of it, too, because as they work with more 5G systems, that will give cars more communication technology. The other way is short-range digital something, SR, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And but the problem still is... I was walking one day with the guy who is the PR director for MIT. Guy's blind, and he said to me, "Do you mind walking me back to my office?" And I'm like, "Yeah, okay." And I said to him, "How do you do this? How do you get around?" And he's like, "Well," I said, "because we're in Cambridge. It changes every single day.
Every second."
Yeah. And he said to me, "Well, here's kind of how it works." He said, "I use my cane," and he's got this little sonar thing he carries with him too. And he says, "I just have to remember. I have to remember that if I'm walking along, tapping my cane, and I hit a barrier, I have to remember that barrier might be there tomorrow, it might not be." So he said, in a way, it's like machine learning. He said, "My brain functions in such a way that it knows that so many steps, so many something happens." And he says, "I know that something should be there. And when it isn't, I have to like open a new page in my brain and say, okay, this is what I need to do." And that's kind of how self-driving cars plot everything, and then they plot the changes. And the changes can be instantaneous, which is going to be part of it. So it's going to be a while still. I always say that there's nothing I like more than driving. There's nothing I hate worse than driving.
Yes.
Driving, like Mike was saying, driving the Acura NSX in some of the little back roads in Bedford, even though he couldn't really go fast, was probably still a lot of fun. Driving an Acura NSX stuck on Route 128while they're paving. Not a lot of fun. Not a lot of fun at all. And still... Route 128 has yet to disappoint me. Since I've had my driver's license, for however long that is, Route 128 has been under construction. Just once I want to drive on 128 and go from, I don't know, Route 24 to the New Hampshire border and not see construction. Just
that ain't
once.
Never going
to
happen.
Once. I just want to do it once. Just to see what it's like. Let's talk to... Robert in Tingsboro. Robert.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I have a question. You're talking about hybrids. These mileage claims, does that include both engines and over a certain number of miles or just the gas powered?
It can be both. If it's a regular hybrid that doesn't need to be plugged in.
All right.
So it's one that just charges the battery up off the gasoline motor, the mileage claims are the mileage claims. It's whatever, if it says it gets 50 miles per gallon or 30 miles per gallon, that's what it should get. If it is a plug-in hybrid, it will give you a variety of mileages because some plug-in hybrids will work on just a battery for 15, 20, 25, 30 miles, 40 miles in some cases. And so you're running just off the electricity. And then some of them will be a combination. So some of the mileage you see will say something like 99E. So that's 99 miles to the gallon combined with electricity. And then you got to factor in the cost of electricity. The cost of electricity here in Massachusetts is not that cheap. So... unless you have a solar panel in your backyard, you're going to pay so much a kilowatt hour for electricity. So you're going to pay more than other places in the country. So, regular hybrid. So if it's a hybrid, anything from a Toyota Prius to a Nissan
Honda
to
Fit,
Honda Fit, whatever the latest greatest hybrid is. It's very hard. You would have to work really hard to fully deplete the battery. So the battery was almost not in the picture. You can, I mean, if you drive with your foot to the floor, 0 to 20 a whole bunch of times, that's when the electric motor does the most work. And I suppose you could deplete the battery, but usually it gets to the point where that doesn't usually happen.
Yeah, my concern was the gasoline engine part. The actual mileage may not be 50 miles per gallon. It's just the engine itself is pulling that, probably a pretty heavy car, even if it's small.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. I have looked at a variety of different hybrids and driven a bunch of different hybrids, and I have never not got at least what the mileage was. In fact, I've had people say to me, well, yeah, you must be, you know, Toyota must be paying you to say you're getting 55 miles to the gallon. And I'm like, that's what I'm getting. I don't, you know, nobody's paying me to do anything. And, right. and it's like, no, that's what they get. But it's kind of funny. I see more people driving hybrids today doing 85 miles an hour out on the highway. And I kind of wonder if the other ones are just saying, you know, hey, I'm not getting the gas mileage I should.
Yes, possibly. Yeah, I see the same thing.
Yeah.
I was just curious. Yeah, I'm not interested in one. I just thought that their mileage might be skewed because they're using two different, you know, engines, electric and gas.
No, it really is a combination of, you know, the mileage is, you're right. The mileage is skewed because it's electric and gas, and that's what gives it the good mileage. But if you have to plug it in, then there's that factor of, well, the electricity costs something.
Yeah, exactly, and it takes fossil fuel for the most part to make that electricity.
Yeah, around here, most of our electricity comes from natural gas. You know, here we don't have a lot of coal or oil-fired power plants; they're mostly gas power plants. But that's a factor that people have to think about at the same time. And you know, electric cars on the surface, if you somebody asked me the other day, is an electric car really a good deal? And I said, well, if you could compare apples to apples, yeah, it would be. If you could go out and buy a Chevy Bolt for the price of a Toyota Corolla, it would be a good deal. It'd probably cost you 5 or 6 cents a mile to recharge the battery as opposed to whatever it costs to put gas in a Toyota Corolla. And the more you drive it, the more economical it is. The problem is a Chevy Bolt's 40 grand and a Toyota Corolla is 22.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, there's a lot of gas between
that.
Yeah,
and whenever anybody tells, when gasoline was close to $4 a gallon and people told me they were selling their, you know, Toyota Camry to buy a Toyota Prius, and I'm like, well, nobody, you're not going to get much for the Camry because gas is expensive, and you're going to pay probably, you might even pay full price or more for the Prius, so you might end up taking, depending on how old the car is, you know, $10,000 or $15,000 out of your pocket to buy a Prius. You can buy a lot of gas with that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
sometimes it's you know, like a lot of PC, you know.
Yeah.
And BS.
Well, you're using all the initials today.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for it.
All right. Take care. All right. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. You can, the classic car show at the Boston Common is, it's called the Boston Cup, and it's taking place tomorrow, and they're calling it the Northeast Premier Car Show. It's not cheap though. It's free to the public outside the ropes, but if you want to get inside the ropes, it costs you about $50. If you want to go to the VIP Pavilion, that includes lunch, $100. Better be good lunch. And it's a rain or shine event. They're promising to have some really nice cars down there too. So again, it seems like right now Boston has turned into this sort of, you know, Boston, I'll say Boston, New England kind of area has turned into this real kind of premier automotive event. And the folks down at Newport, like Gunther said, there's no problem with having two good restaurants on the same street. You know, they'll both do well. And the idea of having Audrain, which is a small museum in Newport, and having the Newport Car Museum kind of down the street just outside of Newport, with fabulous cars, and all of a sudden this has turned into this fabulous event with Yeah, I think I'm going to something Thursday night. I think. And it's black tie.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Do you have a tux?
No. I'm going to have to wear a suit. Just a suit. I don't have... So no tux. I almost bought one once.
I should have bought one when I got married.
Yeah, well, when I was involved with the Lars Anderson Auto Museum, I was a corporator. I don't know what that is, but I was a corporator. So I got invited to all their stuff, and a lot of their stuff was all fancy. And I'm like, I'm going to this stuff like every 6 weeks. I probably ought to buy a tux. And I almost did, but of course, being somewhat frugal, I was going to buy it from Building 19.
Oh, polyester tux?
No, they bought out like Mr. Tux or something, yeah. You know. So they were real tux. And I'm like, you know, for $100 or whatever it was, I mean, be no different than renting it. Only you just owned it. I was like, yeah, maybe I should. But I didn't. So. But the thing on Thursday night, John O'Hurley, the guy from Seinfeld that played like Elaine's boss, is going to be there. Kenny Loggins is going to be there. Jay Leno is going to be there, and other surprise guests.
Me, I'll go with you.
With me, I guess. Apparently, we got 4 tickets, and I'm on a list of 7 people.
Okay.
So, senior vice presidents, vice presidents, managing directors, directors, then me. So, I'm on a will call list. So. But I've been told that I'm probably going because 3 out of the 4 tickets have been spoken for. So, and I deferred to the VPs. I said, you know, let them, you know, especially they probably fit more than I do somehow. But
sure.
So, I've never met Jay Leno, so I don't know what that will be. I don't know if I'll get to meet him, and I don't know if I really care. But he seems like a very nice guy. So we'll have to wait and see. So that's coming up. Oh, and next Saturday,
hey, how you doing?
I will be at the Cars and Coffee event, which will be taking place at the Fort Adams Fort in Newport. So they're going to have, that's going to start, I think the Cars and Coffee event runs from 7 to 10. So I'm going to be there in a booth somewhere. Hopefully everything will work the way it's supposed to, and we'll do that.
We have Ted, but we also have to go do a break. So,
which one do you want to do first?
We'll do the break first.
Let's do the break first, and then we'll get back with Ted Ryan, and he is a kind of historian archivist, and we're going to learn a little bit about cars that have gotten presidents around and movie stars and everything else. Lincoln will celebrate its 80th anniversary of the Continental. My name is Sean Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. We will be right back.
Well, I can stand beside ideals I think are right. And I can stand beside the ideals.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, 100.3 FM, WROLradio.com, or the WROL app. Well, with us on the phone is Ted Ryan. He is the Ford Archives and Brand Manager. And there's a birthday party going on at Ford Motor Company. Lincoln is turning 80 years old, or the Continental's turning 80 years old. Is that right, Ted?
That's it. The Continental is turning 80 years old on October the 2nd, and we're going to have a great birthday party for it.
Lincoln has a company that has carried around a lot of important people over its lifetime, hasn't it?
It has. The Continental has been the car of choice for presidents. It's been the car of choice for celebrities. Elizabeth Taylor actually had one painted to match her eye color. So it's quite a distinctive car, and it's got a great origin story. Edsel Ford was traveling to Europe in 1938, and he saw the beautiful designs of the European cars, and he knew that nothing was like that in the American market. He had a great quote about it. He said, "Father made the most popular car in the world, but I want to make the best car." So he came back to the Lincoln Labs. He began to work on the current Lincoln Zephyr. He lengthened it by 12 inches and lowered it by 4 inches, and you got the classic, sleek, continental look of the car, and the Lincoln Continental was born.
Yeah, they're really some interesting cars, and a friend of mine has one of the LBJ limos from it was one of the presidential limos that was described as Lyndon Johnson's galooping car. I'm not actually sure I even know what that means, but I guess when you're a president from Texas, you go galooping, and you do it in a Lincoln. But it's a pretty cool car because it still has the mobile rotary phone in it and a little hidden compartment. You press a button, and two little cut crystal decanters come up where I guess he kept his whiskey and branch water.
His medicine. The Lincolns are amazing, and they have such a long history. So the first generation only made it to 1948, and we only produced about 5,000 plus or minus of that one. And then the second generation, the Mark II, is the one that's so well known in 1956. At that time, it's the most expensive car in the world, over $10,000 per unit. And it was so popular among the celebrities. Frank Sinatra had to have one. Dwight Eisenhower had one. LBJ had one. I was just at the LBJ Library in Austin, Texas, and saw his Lincoln in his museum there. And then the one that most people probably identify with is the 1961 with the center opening coach doors. That was the classic Lincoln that you could aspire to. For our birthday, Lincoln decided to celebrate 80 years by doing 80 specially designed center opening coach door models. So in 2019, we announced the program. It was first come, first served. They sold out very quickly, and the first are being delivered right now, right in time for the birthday.
Yeah, and that was that. Everybody can Sunday morning quarterback on all kinds of, or Monday morning quarterback on all kinds of things, you know. And a lot of people have said that's the only way the new car should have come is with the center opening doors.
And, you know, it was an homage to the 61 right. And to the origins of Lincoln, and it proved so popular. Stand by for news for the 2020 model year and center opening doors. Nothing to announce yet, but I may tease that something's coming down the road.
Yeah. The other thing is, and I seem to remember over the years from everything from working on cars to just staring at them, Lincoln has always had, over the years, has had designer names attached to their cars. So I seem to remember the Cartier edition and the Bill Blass edition. Was there others as well?
It was. That was a celebrity edition that they did, or a designer edition. There was an entire series of them, the Da Vinci designer series. They had four or five designers that they invited in to let them customize the Lincoln for their own look and feel. Some of the colors from that time in the 70s are kind of crazy, too, as the designers just went wild with them. If you get bored one day, look them up on the computer and look at some of the crazy colors that the Lincolns took on.
Well, there was some drug use in the 70s. It might have had something to do with it. Go ahead.
I was going to say the one thing that goes through Lincoln from beginning to end is design, though, because that's what Edsel Ford was. Edsel Ford was a person who brought style, class, and distinction to the Lincoln line, and frankly to the Ford line with the Model A. In 1927, surpassing the design of the Model T. That design has always been a hallmark of Lincoln.
Yeah, it has, and you know, as much as the world seems to revolve, and I think, you know, whoever figures this out next, I mean, as much as the world seems to revolve around SUVs, and certainly the Navigator and the Aviator and the variety of SUVs that Lincoln offers now, there is still a market for luxury sedans. And you know, I kind of look back at what, you know, try to think what the next big thing is, you know, when it was even basic transportation, when it was the 60s, it was a station wagon, then it was a minivan, then it was an SUV, and you know, whatever the next thing is. And I kind of wonder if luxury sedans are going to be the next big thing at some point.
Well, the Lincoln Continental certainly is, but also with the crossover SUVs, the Lincoln Corsair, mm-hmm. which was just announced. Yep. I've seen it. It's, my God, it's a beautiful car. Mm-hmm. It has every bit of the Lincoln design DNA built into it. So that it's luxury at your fingertips and an excellent stylish ride with the black label program. It's just amazing. It's an amazing car. If I had one Lincoln to pick, I would probably pick the 61 Lincoln, but the Corsair might be a quick number two right behind it.
Hmm. I think I'm a Mark II fan myself. So
Mark II. You can't go wrong with any of those.
that was such a beautiful car. And then, you know, even as you kind of look at the, you know, as the Lincolns changed over the years, and you know, if it's anything from, you know, TV placement to where you saw some great Lincolns, you know, all of a sudden appeared in TV, you know, TV programs, and you know, whether it was the, you know, whatever it was, Mark 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever the varieties of them as they came up, there were some fabulous cars. And I think that's what, you know, still I think today that's what it's still a little bit missing here and there. And I think as you pointed out, as you know, Lincoln is looking at the Continental, and even as you said, with some of the crossovers where you can take some of that you know, true Lincoln Continental DNA and put it into these cars and make them special, I think that's what's you know, I think that's what can work for people, and you know, sort of make it not an SUV and make it truly luxury transportation that rides fabulously and has plenty of power and does all the things that makes people comfortable.
100% agree. And you mentioned some of the movies. My favorite comparison, that was in everything from The French Connection to Animal House. A lot of people forget that the car they customized at the end of Animal House, it was a Lincoln Continental. So it runs the gamut of everything from the high and to the lowbrow comedy.
Well, you know, I always thought Animal House should have won an Oscar, but I might be in the minority on that one, but no, it is great to see this, and it's great that Lincoln is celebrating 80 years with the car, and that there is going to be you know, some other, you know, some specialties coming out, and who knows, maybe in the future we'll go back to seeing some of these designer series cars that come out as well, and you know, maybe adding to that too, that, you know, can again sort of make the American luxury market kind of truly special.
Anything that makes it stand apart, and the desire for distinction has been a Lincoln hallmark. The 61 Lincoln wasn't the first car to do coach doors. Those had been done, you know, before by different manufacturers, there was a Lincoln in the mid-20s that had coach doors. Mm. But it was a desire to do something different in 1961 to make the car stand out. When the Mark II came out, every detail, every ounce of customization was put into the car. The designer series in the 70s, the sleek look when the Continental was redone in its most recent generation. There's always an attention to detail with Lincoln that makes Lincoln stand apart within that luxury market. It to me, it's the best of the luxury cars, and I aspire to have one. That's the one I aspire to have.
Well, start saving now.
That's the truth.
And if people want to find out more information about Lincoln and maybe a little bit about the anniversary, is there some place they can go to learn a little bit more about it?
there is. If they go to the corporate Ford website, mm-hmm. Ford corporate, I think it's fordcorporate.ford.com or vice versa.
Yep.
A article giving the details on the history of the Lincoln Continental is going to be popping up on Monday.
Perfect. All right. For our historian friends out there, good. Hey, Ted, thanks for taking a little time out of your Saturday and joining us up here in Boston.
Great. And there's some amazing photos that are going to pop on the website, too. So if the history is going to be dry, go look for some of the classic photos of the design of the Lincoln over the years.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, historically, when you look at cars and you kind of learn about how they – you know, how they sort of started to take place, whether it's, you know, whether it's anything from a Lincoln to an Edsel, for that matter, and you kind of learn more about it and you learn a little bit of the history. It's always pretty fascinating to find out that, you know, sometimes these were, you know, these were huge hits, both internally and externally with the company. Sometimes things that didn't look like they were going to do that well did extremely well. And, you know, it's amazing to see it all happen. And thanks for sharing some of the history with our audience today.
Thanks for having me on a Saturday morning.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye now. That was Ted Ryan. Bye. He is the Ford Archives and Brand Manager for Ford and Lincoln. And
so is Lincoln still making cars?
Yeah, the Continental.
But Ford isn't making cars.
Ford is
making
not,
this Mustang. Sorry.
Yeah, making a Mustang and maybe something else. But the idea, he kind of hinted at it a little bit, that the, you know, they made a few Lincoln Continentals with suicide doors, coach doors. And they sold those out immediately for $110,000. And they might be going to make some more.
Good.
Yeah. So, but I still think there is, you know, I kind of look at, and Gunther said it too. He said the Finn cars of the 50s. You know, these big, giant, somewhat obnoxious cars. But that's what made Lincoln, and that's what made Cadillac, and that's what made, you know, some of these luxury cars luxurious, because they were big. And they were, you know, were they big and stupid? Well, maybe. But on the other hand, when people thought of what an American luxury car was, they went, well, it's a Cadillac or it's a Lincoln.
The issue, though, with those big cars, mm-hmm. is there were less cars on the road then. There's more cars now, and it's harder and harder to, like, my friend who was looking for a subcompact car forever.
Yeah.
Finally found one, by the way.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Chevy, I can't think of what it was. It's a little tiny little
Spark?
It's a Chevy Spark. Yep. I cannot get in that car. Can't do it.
I'm renting one.
good luck to you. He drives into Boston.
In November, I'm renting one.
He and his wife drive into Boston every day.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I need something that I can, if I see a parking space, I can just zip in and zip out.
Right.
And you can't do that with this.
You can't, no. You can't. No, and these are, but I still think the idea of, no one's ever going to look at a Chevy Spark and go, that's American luxury.
No.
No one's ever going
to
say that.
I get what you're saying, but I understand why people are hesitant to buy these boats of cars.
Yeah.
The ride in those things, though, is like riding in what you would picture a cloud to be in. They're amazing.
Yeah. My one trip this year in a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, that I wasn't invited to.
Yeah, you weren't invited to. Pretty amazing ride, and some of the luxury cars, but you know, like Mike from Hingham has a very nice Lexus. Lexus makes a beautiful car. The big Lexus, the LS, is, I still think, one of the best luxury cars on the market. I like it better than the Mercedes S-Class. I think the overall ride is better. I think the interior comfort is better. I just like it better. I like it better than a BMW 7 Series. Not quite as sporty. The Mercedes is a little sportier. The BMW is maybe a little sportier. But I always and still will to this day use the big Lexus to compare other luxury cars. It's sort of the benchmark of luxury cars for me. The Lincoln, it's nice. And the Lincoln Continental that I drove for a very short period of time, I think it was just a day or two, was a nice car. But how many of them do you see on the road?
Not much.
And how many of them do you see on the road that don't have a livery plate on them?
None.
Almost none, yeah. So, and I think it's because it just sort of blends. It's just a, you know, but if they did something that made it stand out, and maybe coach doors, suicide doors, because, you know, marketing guys can't use the term suicide doors. Because their lawyers probably are bothered by that. But the idea that you can have this fabulous luxury car that's that I don't care if you and three of your friends go out to dinner and you pull up to the fancy restaurant and the valet opens the back door and it opens up backwards to what they normally go and people come out of it and go, wow, look at geez, that's kind of special.
That's what I was going to say about the Lincoln. The Lincoln's has always been a great car. I like Lincolns. I've never owned one. I had a couple friends who owned some of the 70s Lincolns that were on those air shocks. And, but don't remember them after.
Right.
Like the second they're out of your sight, you're like, oh.
Yeah. Where if a 58 Cadillac drove through the parking lot, you'd go, look at that.
Yes.
Where, you know, if a 2019 Lincoln drove through the parking lot, you go, uh-huh. Yeah. And I think that's what, you know, and even, you know, right now in our parking lot, as we kind of look out the window here of the WROL studio, there's mostly SUVs, and the mostly SUVs kind of mostly look alike. There's one Mercedes and a couple of Toyota Corollas, one Audi, I guess, that I saw drive by. No, no, and kind of a Dodge out there and a Volkswagen. Where's the Cadillac? Where's the Lincoln? Where's the Chevy? Where's the Buick?
Is there any American cars out there?
Where's the Ford? There's a Ford van, and there's a Dodge over there. I think that's it. There is no American cars. I mean, now, granted, half of those cars are probably made in America, but they're not American cars. And it's just sort of odd to me somehow. And I think even if you say that, you know, American cars were a reflection of American excess, which some people would say, I think that they were still, you know, Ramblers were still cool. Well, maybe not the Marlin, but I actually like the Marlin, but of course I would. But some of those cars were really unique. I want to talk about the car that got me around a little bit last week, and that was the Ford Edge. The Ford Edge is, speaking of SUVs, it's an SUV.
Is it an SUV or is it a crossover?
Both. It's the same thing.
But, okay, is it built on a car chassis or?
They're all built on car chassis. Very seldomly are SUVs built on anything but.
Okay.
Unibody.
Because I thought that was the whole difference at one point.
That you could argue that was the difference between the Ford Edge and the Ford Explorer. The Explorer is a truck. The Edge is a crossover car.
Okay.
No, it's not. It's still, they're all the same.
Okay.
Yeah. But the Ford Edge is, I'm going to call it a mid-size SUV. It seats 5. You want a seat 7, you buy the Explorer. You want a seat 5, you buy the Edge. The Edge comes in several trim levels, SE, SEL, Titanium, and the performance-oriented ST version. Except for the ST, all other trims are powered by a 2-liter. 2-liter. Little tiny 2-liter. 4-cylinder EcoBoost turbocharged engine. The ST version is powered by a 2.7-liter V6 that develops 335 horsepower. Our road test was in the Titanium version of the Edge, not the high-performance one, and it did have optional all-wheel drive. It feels good. I mean, it's a solid-feeling car without any doubt. It's comfortable. The ride was surprisingly good. Even on fast turns, it felt pretty controlled. I didn't have a chance to drive it off-road, and it's not really meant for off-road. It's meant for snowy stuff. But I suspect it would do well and should be able to handle our winters without any problems. The 2-liter turbocharged engine is capable of 250 horsepower, but feels a little underpowered at times. When you kind of lean on the accelerator, just before the turbocharger starts to make more horsepower, it feels a little like it's missing a couple horses. It's fine. I mean, it's not, you know, if you step on the gas, it takes right off. So 250 horsepower, not bad. But it feels a little bit lacking. I mean, and it weighs 2 tons. So it's not like it's light. So there's a bit of turbo lag. The 8-speed transmission seems to be a good match. It's an improvement over the previous 6-speed automatic. The Edge had all of Ford's safety features, including automatic emergency braking, blind spot warning, lane centering that worked in conjunction with the advanced cruise control. It also had the optional self-parking system. I got mixed feelings. It worked okay, but for parallel parking, and I don't claim to be the best parallel parker in the world.
I'm an artist at it.
I could do it quicker. I was better than the car was. Or at least I was faster than the car was.
All right, I won't say I'm a fast parallel park. I can be.
But yeah.
I am an artist at getting in and out of spaces like that. People are like, how did you do that?
Oh, that's because you live where you park on the street.
This is true.
Yeah, which makes my wife, when we first got married an eon ago, we had a park on the street. We lived in an apartment, had a park on the street. And she had a car without power steering.
Oh.
She was a great parallel parker. It was a 60, and it's not that they were this old, but it was a 65 Ford Falcon.
Okay.
That I bought from a guy who got it from his grandfather. And it had an AM radio, a manual choke. Thing only had like 20,000 miles on it. I don't know how old it was at least 10 years old when I bought it. It was a little six cylinder, no power steering. And granddad said, I don't need no heat. And it didn't have a heater. We put one in, but it didn't have a heater. And the heater we put in wasn't that great, but at least it had some heat.
Something.
Yeah. But granddad sprung for the AM radio, but not for the heat, whoever this guy was. And an automatic transmission, but a manual choke. A manual choke, automatic transmission. It was sort of a weirdly set up car. It was purchased locally here in Massachusetts at a dealer in Easton, I guess. And it was a super dependable car, to the point where I actually had it painted at one point because it was starting to rust. And then I finally said to my wife, yeah, we probably ought to think about getting rid of it. It's starting to get kind of old. It was real old at that point. And we sold it to somebody for a few $100s. The guy drove it to like Tennessee and back 5,000 times for something. And then what happened? Oh, my sister bought it. My sister bought it in between. That's what it was. My sister bought it, I think. I think this, or the other way around. Yeah, my sister must have bought it first. And someone hit it and dented the door. And the insurance company came out and said, well, that's a classic. And
totaled it?
Totaled it.
Oh.
And gave her like 4 times what she paid for it.
Hey.
which was kind of funny. But anyway, she was a good parallel parker because of that. I will admit, though, when I did parallel park the Edge quickly and efficiently, the backup camera helped a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. As I got into a space which people drove by, and I'm like, I can fit in that space. Backed up, right in, pulled up. 2 maneuvers. In, straighten it back out. It was done 6 inches from the curb. Perfect. But the backup camera helped a lot. The interior of the Edge is comfortable, wide supportive seats. They remain comfortable even after being stuck in traffic. I've driven a couple of cars lately that the seats seem comfortable at first, but after an hour or so, I find myself squirming a little bit. The seats in the Edge didn't do that. The seats also were heated and cooled, and the steering wheel was heated. They added a remote start, which good for hot and cold weather. You can have the AC or the heat come on. Cargo space, about 40 cubic feet behind the rear seat. It expands to almost 75 with the rear seat folded. Power lift gate was handy. It could be opened remotely. I hope that I don't think of myself as being that lazy, but, you know, the power lift gate, you have that in yours?
Yeah. Yes, I love it.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, it goes up a little, goes up and down a little too slow.
Yeah.
But I love it in that I can press the button as I'm getting out, and by the time I get around there,
it's open.
And I also have the little feature that I can swing my foot underneath, and it opens or closes, so that if I have two hands, that I like.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I'm a tech guy. Like, I'm not a techie guy, but I like tech that works.
And yeah, I do. Tech that is frustrating.
No,
doesn't work. Yeah. There's a large center console, shallow bin. You can put all kinds of stuff in it. There's even a 110-volt convenience outlet, which I'm still having problem understanding. Why do I want a 110-volt convenience outlet?
Tailgating.
Charge up my... Yeah, but it's only like... You can't plug a lot of stuff in.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess if you want to plug a Xbox in or something, but other than that, I mean, plug a laptop in and keep the battery charged. But it's not like you can plug in real. You can't plug in a blender.
No.
Doesn't have enough amperage. But it's one of those things that's like, oh, we made it. So there it is. I wonder how many people actually plug stuff in.
No.
Yeah. Some probably do. Anyway, the Ford Edge is a solid performer. It's in one of the most competitive segments out there. Between the 3 and 5 and 7 seat SUV, midsize SUV market, there's a lot of competition out there. It's a good SUV, no question about it. I just don't know if good is good enough. Base price, about 30 grand. Fuel economy, 21 city, 28 highway, not bad. I average about 26, 27. Hasn't been crash tested yet, the new one, so I assume it will do well, because almost everything does well now. So if you're looking for something a little bit different, people that I know who drive Ford Edges love them. They like the size. They like the maneuverability. It's a little different than the competition, even their own competition like the Explorer. I still wonder if it steals away a little bit of the Explorer competition, similar to what Honda did with the Honda Pilot. Now they have the Honda Passport. So the Honda Passport's kind of a Honda Pilot. It's bigger than a CR-V, smaller than a Passport. I mean, smaller than a Pilot, seats 5 instead of 7. It's kind of made for you if you went camping and hiking, which you don't. Why don't we take another break, pay some bills if you would like to join us. 617-770-3030 is our number. We got a few minutes left. We'll be right
back. Well, my time. So quickly, I went lickety splitly. On the other side of the street, I knew stood a girl that looked like you. I guess that's deja vu, but I thought this can't be true.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program. Well, let's finish off the morning with Frank from Medford. Good morning, Frank.
Morning, John Paul.
How are you?
I had a question on rotors here. I did brakes, the rotors on my Ford van.
Yeah.
And when I went to the store, they said that they had rotors like for 2-year warranty and a 3-year warranty, and the difference was that the 3-year warranty was carbon rotors. And I'm wondering, is that, you know...
One's made out of better beer cans than the other. They're all made out of recycled steel. One might have a little bit higher level of carbon. I'm always sort of bothered by the good, better, best brake rotors. Don't you always want to put the better ones in? You know, I have bought cheap brake rotors in the past. I mean, there is such a thing as cheap brake rotors, and I still wonder, are they really, is there that much real difference between the good ones and the not so good ones? You know, the idea that brake rotors only have a 2-year warranty, I don't know what that means. You know, aren't they warranted till you wear the brakes out and then you buy new ones?
Well, I have a terrible problem with this Carline Ford. It seems like every rotor that goes on there, You know, this is like the fourth set that's gone on this vehicle.
You might want to look at is look and see if the rear brakes are working as well as they should. You might have a bad proportioning valve, and it might be the front brakes are doing all the work and the rear brakes aren't.
And they're like, what, overheating the rotor or something?
Yeah,
Yeah. The and here's one for you. Now, when I finished the brakes, and I meticulously did them because it's a single hub and rotor, yeah. So yeah. You have to repack the bearings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just noticed after I did them, my wife going down the street, and I heard a click, 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 and I'm going, what the heck is that? It sounds like the cotter pin is like tapping the cover, you know, the metal cover that goes over
the dust cover?
Yeah, like the dust. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like a click, you know, and I'm saying, I can't believe that, you know, that there's something making a noise.
Well, I mean, that would make a noise until just the cotter pin bent over the rest of the way. So, I mean, I guess it wouldn't hurt to pull the dust cover
off.
Yeah, I
have to look at it.
Yeah, and, you know, trim up the cotter pin. You know, the cotter pin should be bent. You know, you slide the cotter pin straight through, bend one end of it up over the edge of the hub, and then cut it so everything's flat and even. Don't bend it like a wishbone. You know, bend it so it goes up over the top of the hub, and, you know, bang it flat.
Like it holds a retainer. Yeah. I didn't know on the, you know, I always go by just tightening the nut that once it's touched snug, and then just put the retainer on. I'm wondering if I do it too loose.
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain, you know, technical, you know, to me it's always, you know, when it's down, you know, a rotor has a certain bearing preload, so it should be, you know, not wound tight, but it should be snug. So it should be, as soon as you take it down and there's no movement in the bearing, a smidge more. I don't know how else to describe it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just like a notch more.
Yeah.
Thank you, John Paul.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, look, it's Matt O'Donnell in for Paul Sullivan. Grab a microphone there, Matthew.
Let's see what we can do.
Yeah, grab that one.
There we go.
So
he's taller than me. There we go.
Yeah, I know. He's taller than most everybody, you know. So what are you doing here today?
Well, Paul is out today. He's feeling under the weather. Yeah. So, I'm going to kick off the program, and I'll stick around right up till 4.
Look at you. Look at you cranking up the overtime.
It does help a bit, I have to admit.
So what do you got on tap for the Irish Hit Parade this morning?
We got all kinds of stuff. Of course, a lot of Wolf Tones will be playing. Mm-hmm. Dublin City Ramblers. We'll have the Fenian Sons and a whole lot more. Yeah. You like the Fenian Sons?
I do. Everybody does. Yeah, everybody does. Yeah.
Great guys.
And contrary to what other people think, I'm kind of a little bit of a Dropkick Murphys fan too. So.
You know, I am too. We may slip in some Dropkick in there, maybe some Rose Tattoo.
Yeah, we could do that. I have certain weird selections on Pandora, and I had the radio on it or my speaker on at work one day, and somebody comes by and goes, "What the heck do you listen to?" And I said, "Well, it's kind of varied. There's a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Nothing bad with that.
Yeah, a little bit of this,
nothing
a little
bad
bit of
at
that.
All
yeah.
with that." And that's what we'll kind of have today in the Hit Parade. It'll be varied.
It's all good. It's all good. Yeah. Hey, that piano player in the background means I have to leave. Next week, we will be broadcasting live from Newport Car Week. We'll be down there under a tent somewhere. So, you know, listen, tune in. We'll talk about some of the cool cars that are at Cars and Coffee next week, so that should be fun. Till next week, make sure you wear your seatbelt, drive safely, be good to your car. Very best in Irish music coming up right now with the Irish Hit Parade. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.
Take the time for to wander across the main bridge to the north side and yonder. And if you look long to the west, there's a chance that you'll see her move down to the bridge for the dance.